I'm Mindy Todd. Welcome to The Point. Later in the hour, we discuss how reflections on gratitude, acceptance, and hope can restore a sense of well-being. But first, on many fronts, it seems that America is becoming a country divided. Differences along political, racial, and gender lines are creating an us versus them mentality. We see it on the national stage, in our communities, and even within our families. Today, we talk about what is lost when we lose connections to one another and ways we can work to come together. Joining us is Danielle Tolley. She's Executive Director of Pilgrim's Landing. Welcome.
Thank you.
And Anne LeClaire, author of a number of novels, including The Halo Effect. Good to have you back.
Thanks for coming in. Always good to be here.
All right. So, Danielle, for listeners who are not familiar with Pilgrim's Landing, describe your mission and what you're all about.
So we're a nonprofit spiritual life center, and we say that we're working at the intersection of spirituality, education, and social justice. Basically, our world is in great need of transformation, healing, and we feel that it's when people do that, first on an individual level, then it can ripple out to families and communities. And so we offer programs, workshops, courses, classes, experiences for people to come together and find common ground, a way around things that we often think divide us, primarily starting with spirituality and religion. So we use the term interspiritual to include wisdom traditions, world religions, but also psychology, nature, children's programming. We use the labyrinth as a symbol and as a tool for really going on your own personal journey, defining spirituality for yourself, growing and learning in community, and then taking whatever that learning is for you out into the world. So one of our big values is, how does your inner work that we are all called to do in this world, how does that meet outer action? How does that allow us to, you know, not just go meditate in a cave, but how do we take that learning and that divinity that lives within each of us, mm-hmm. how do we put that into action into the world? And so we try to create opportunities or offer opportunities for people to find ways to engage more in their community in authentic ways.
All right. So, Anne, we had you on the program a while back discussing the Halo Effect. So remind listeners about the storyline and the artist and documentary that inspired that book.
Sure. Well, I wasn't intending to certainly write any book about saints, sainthoods, any of that, until I saw a documentary quite by chance about it's called Divining the Human, the cathedral paintings of John Nava. And he is a California artist who was commissioned to do a series of saints for the new Cathedral of Our Angels in L.A. And the short version is he created these incredible, incredible tapestries. He did the artwork, and then they were made in a mill in Bruges, Belgium. And the thing that struck me, one of the many things about this wonderful documentary, was that he used his townspeople as models for the saints in these incredible tapestries. And as part of the documentary, they'd show his models at work in the town or in interviews, and then they'd show the finished tapestries of them as saints. And it was just so beautiful. And you could see in their faces what he had seen. And after I saw the documentary, that I happened to go to a concert that night, and in the auditorium, I started to look at the people around me. They all started to look like saints. So my husband's laughing at this, and but truly, I just look, and I was like, I was seeing through John Nava's eyes, because that's what he did. So after the concert, we went home. The next morning, I went to the supermarket. The checkout clerk looked like a saint. And I told my husband that, and he said, how long is this going to be going on? And I said, I don't know, I'm just kind of taken by it. Like, it's all how we view someone, what we're looking for, a softer gaze. And John Nava seemed to be staying with me, so I was telling another friend about it, and she was a writer, and she said, you need to write a book about it. And I said, I'm not doing a book about this. And she said, no, really, I can hear the passion. I think there's something here. And I go, no, I'm doing a book of short stories right now. I'm not going to start another novel. But I was haunted by it. And one morning I woke up and thought, what if you were an artist and were using your townspeople as models for saints, unaware one that had done something horrible and painful in your life, in this case, murdering your daughter. And I was just so taken by it that I knew that's what I wanted to write. But the side effect for me lasted long after the book came out, during the writing of the book and after, which is I started to look at people around me differently. Mm. It was just with again, that softer gaze instead of with judgment, because I think so often we're used to looking at people with our own personal little inner dialogue going on right. about their age or their skin color or their height or their body shape or what they do or whether they're smoking a cigarette or mm-hmm. whatever. In fact, in one workshop I taught, I asked people, we're creating other people as them instead of the universal us, mm-hmm. you know, and yeah. this somehow made me feel so connected. And I felt sweeter toward people. And
then people are sweeter to you.
Well, this is, you know, it happens. True. It's just really interesting that a soft answer turneth away wrath. It's amazing that just by a kind of openness, you're not even aware you're showing. By looking at someone in the eyes and not having that cultural bias or slant mm-hmm. That we learn. And so one workshop, it happened to be in Charleston, South Carolina. I asked people in the workshop to make a list of the things, I said they didn't have to share it, but they did, that they automatically create the other. Mm-hmm. And it was like people who don't smoke cigarettes, or people who smoke cigarettes, or people who are overweight, or people who are underweight, or people who work out, or people. I mean, it caused a lot of laughter when we realized the number of little voices in our head that are separating us from other people. And that has stuck with me ever since.
Yeah. So it's hard to find another time in recent American history that we've been a country so divided on so many levels, politically, along racial lines, along gender lines. What are some of the reasons you think we find ourselves in this place?
How much time do you have?
Great question.
Yeah.
You know, the way I understand it is that we have had a society, a country founded on this idea of white patriarchy. You know, this land was not occupied by white people, and it began with enslavement and automatically seeing the other and oppression of the Native and mm-hmm. First Nation people who lived here. And so I think that culture of white patriarchy is, I think it's ending. Mm. And I think it's the last gasp of it. And so I think we're seeing kind of the bloody knuckles reach up with all their might to hold on to a way that most of the people in this country realize is not the way forward and is not the future.
Yeah, that's a great answer.
It is. Yeah. I also think that it comes down to a single word, which is fear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And when we're in a place of fear, to bolster our own sense of strength, we have to make the other the other. Mm-hmm. You have to find others that are the object of our fear, to place it somewhere. And so when we're operating out of fear, intelligent decisions can't be made. Wise, even more so, wise decisions can't be made. Decisions made out of a place of unity and humanity. And there's floating in the air, or we were talking before we went on about the news now, not this news, of course, here, but how it promotes fear, whether it's even a weather report. Mm. So the financial, if we turn on and just chart it, the financial reports, the weather reports, the social reports, everything is fear-based.
Yeah, and it gets overwhelming.
It is overwhelming, and so we start to create our armor to protect ourselves from the fear, and beliefs is one place to go that make us feel strong and right instead of connected.
And can I add something
absolutely.
To that? I think when we seek feeling strong and right, we seek other people who affirm that within ourselves. And I think that's how we find ourselves living in these echo chambers that I think a lot of us are experiencing. I know I'm experiencing it.
Yeah. As you're saying, people gravitate to news coverage that reinforces their views. They tend to socialize within a circle of people who have similar political or social leanings. For many people, the personal is political. Women who are experiencing harassment, people of color who are experiencing discrimination or hatred. So living inside a bubble often contributes to these divides, but it can also make people feel safer as you're speaking. So how do we get out of those bubbles?
Well, first of all, I think that we're not really comfortable living in limbo, living in messiness, living in confliction. So beginning to understand life is messy. Politics are messy. individually and collectively, it's not clear cut. So to become more comfortable with ambiguity, to become conscious of a self-determination to seek unity, I think if there's any hope, we have to find the common humanity and be mm-hmm. open to it. And even identify what that means. Mm-hmm. What does that mean? Let's find our common humanity. And I think John Nava actually did that by going out into his community and looking into people's faces to see whether you call it the divine in them, the humanity in them, instead of the labels.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Can I add something to that, too? Yeah. I took this really fabulous course in college called Quest for Wholeness. And one of the phrases that the professor shared with us was, seek first to understand and then to be understood. Mm. And I think that has really impacted me and stuck with me in that, you know, if we're really seeking to understand someone, if we keep digging and we stay with it and we stay curious and we stay open to where a conversation or an experience might lead us, I think we land on a shared point of humanity. I think we can't help but land there. But it's really hard to do that and stay with that when it feels like, you know, my values are being trampled on if we're engaging mm-hmm. in a conversation or I see behavior that I find entirely unacceptable. It's hard to stay in that place of wanting to understand somebody.
A survey conducted by Dr. Martin Seligman, some call him the founder of positive psychology, found that regardless of where Americans lived, we have commonly endorsed virtues. They are kindness, fairness, honesty, gratitude, and good judgment. We might agree with, personally, that we have those virtues, but find it harder to believe that other people possess them. So what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think that it's easy to fall into that posture when what we're hearing coming at us feels intuitively and deeply wrong. And so that's the challenge. The challenge isn't the nice coworker or neighbor or relative who holds different views. It's when the views seem abhorrent to us. So how do we get over that fence of, it's a deep divide, actually. I don't know if it's an abyss or a fence, but it's mm-hmm. there. Mm-hmm. To have a open conversation around charged, incredibly charged philosophies and deeply held beliefs. And I remember, and I'm trying desperately now to remember who it was, but I think it was the head of the Black Panthers was going to meet with Nixon, and all his people said, how can you possibly sit down with Nixon? And he said, well, I'll find something we hold in common. Hmm. And they said, what could you hold in common with Nixon? And he thought a minute and he said, we're both fathers.
Mm.
So I think one step over that abyss or fence is to be willing to search for a common ground, a common, even if it's the thinnest of threads, and start there. And don't go for the big issue. Try to start with something you hold in common. Is it gardening? Mm-hmm. Life is full of wonderful things. Is it a group you belong to? Is it bowling? I don't know. Is it is it your children? Is it your grandchildren? Is it nature? Is it find and start there? Mm-hmm. Because I do believe deeply inside we want to connect. We've just forgotten how. Because we are mired in fear.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And as you're saying, too, if you're coming into this conversation with your defenses up, you know, you've got this defensive posture. It's really hard to have that kind of positive conversation. When you come in with something in common, immediately you're like, oh, I like talking to this person, mm-hmm. right? So it puts you in a different, posture. Is what,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And to me, I think that really speaks about curiosity and being open and and fear is what closes us, mm-hmm. right? So I think it's kind of the work of all of us is to try to keep opening, try to keep opening, try to keep opening. Every time we have an experience that might cause us to react from a place of fear, you know, can we pause before we react and see, mm-hmm. well, what would opening feel like in this situation? Or how could I approach this with a little bit more curiosity?
Yeah. 866-999-4626 is our number if you'd like to join our conversation this morning. 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. We'll talk more after a quick break. You're listening to The Point. We are talking about creating unity in divisive communities. With us this morning is Danielle Tully, Executive Director of Pilgrim's Landing, and Anne LeClaire, author of numerous books, including The Halo Effect. 866-999-4626 is our number. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. So we're talking about coming to these conversations with something we have in common, starting them a little different. So you're trying to initiate a respectful conversation focused on shared values, and then it's not reciprocated. It can make one feel angry or resentful. So how do you make that a more positive interaction or move on from it?
Well, another great question.
I think what we just said is to try and find a common thing. And another thing, and this works in every aspect of life, is to take a breath. And I know that just, you know, sounds so glib, but really we're so used to being, especially now, reactive, which can turn into reactionary, instead of reflective. So there's nothing wrong with saying nothing. I know we've been, so many people have been silenced that the thought of engaging with more silence feels like surrender, but it can be the wisest thing, which is to just fall silent and be willing to listen to someone say whatever they're going to say, and then a simple statement of, I can't agree with that, but let's move on to something we can have a pleasant conversation about. And just again, the more safe people feel, because if this is all fear-based, which I think it is, the more places of safety we can give people to talk, the conversation can become saner.
I also think it's important to recognize that we're human. And we have limits, and we have varying capacities for thoughtful, reflective conversations. We all, Anne and I were just talking on our way up here about, we all have baggage. We all have stuff that we bring into each conversation and each relationship that we are in. And so recognizing, one, our own limitations, but also we may be encountering someone else who has their own set of limitations, and maybe the conversation needs to end.
Yeah.
And that's okay.
Yeah.
You know, we don't have to be on a crusade to change minds and change hearts, but I think it's always an opportunity to reflect back to ourselves. Where's the learning for me in this, so I can keep growing and being the person that I want to be in this world, even with all that is around me, maybe not how I would like it to be.
Yeah, and I think you said it earlier, judgment. If you can approach this without judgment, because we're bringing our biases, as you said, Anne, conversations in our heads. So if we can kind of, you know, remind ourselves that those conversations may not be what's really happening.
Michael Singer has this incredible phrase that I love in his book, The Untethered Soul. And he said, if we could hear the voice in our head as a person next to us, jabbering at us all day long, we would go, get this person away from me. It's like having a lunatic roommate in your head.
Right, exactly.
And I think if we can quiet that lunatic roommate to those, you know, again, reactive voices in our head that are just so used to, we don't even question them anymore. Like, why don't I like someone that's smoking a cigarette? You know?
All right. So let's talk to John, who's giving us a call from Yarmouth. Good morning, John.
Hey, good morning, ladies. You know, first thing I'd like to say is there is no scarcity in life. There is no scarcity. Also, there is no fairness. There is, life is just simply not fair. And until we can get together as a group of people, it's just like, what would Jesus do? You've got to be open to accepting people and accepting ideas. It shouldn't be, well, I'm a Republican, I'm a Democrat. It's like, let's get together with our smart heads and let's not think of scarcity.
Yeah.
Let's not be fearful, because fearful is just the devil.
Right. John, thank you for your call. You're breaking up a little bit, but he brings up, not a Republican, not a Democrat. We're all Americans.
Right.
There's
yeah,
that similarity, right? We're all Americans.
Right.
Go ahead. You wanted to say something,
Daniel? I think John brought up a great word, which is scarcity. And I think there's this kind of, there's this spectrum of where we can come from. And on one end is scarcity, on the other end is total abundance. And I think I was just having this conversation with my father recently because he comes from a scarcity mentality. There's not enough. The pie is finite. You know, and if your slice is bigger, then my slice is smaller. And I was sharing with him my perspective, which is abundance. And I think actually the pie is kind of exponential. And the bigger your slice is, that actually enables other people to have a bigger slice of pie. And it kind of just keeps growing. And I think we see that in nature. We see that in the universe. We see that in our natural world, abundance over and over and over again. And there's creation and destruction in that cycle of abundance. But it's never that there isn't enough.
866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. So often we are trying to change the mind of someone else when we're speaking about what our point of view is on something. But it's important to remember that we also have an obligation to open our minds to, and you're sort of talking about this. And that's really difficult for some people. Some people can go, you know what, that's not, listen, maybe that's not a bad, maybe they'll have something that's going to change my mind. But it seems of late that's harder for people to do.
It is, because I think somewhere along the line we learn to be wrong is to be dead. You know, so we're so fierce. They've done many, many studies, and there's one particularly that stuck with me, which is they asked people, two groups, to take a personality test that told how they believed about certain things. And then they took one group and gave them actual annotated evidence on why some of those beliefs were wrong. And it was very well thought out. They were shown lots of presentations. And then they had them do a test again. And instead of making those people change their minds, they actually, the beliefs became fiercer and more ingrained. Mm-hmm. It was like the more we're told we might be wrong, the deeper we hold to those beliefs. And I think that's kind of hardwired in all of us. I don't think it's hardwired. I think it's learned that to be wrong, we can't. How hard it is to say I'm wrong.
Right.
How hard it is just to say I'm wrong.
You know, it's interesting too when somebody says, "Oh, I've done something terrible. It's wrong." You are much more apt to forgive. You know, where you're not going to be mad, right? Because you have to go to someone and say, "I can't believe you did this." When they come to you and say, "I did this, and I'm so sorry," it's a completely different reaction that we have, isn't it?
It is. Yeah. And many of our beliefs we cling to, or we first accept, and then they get more deeper in us, is that somehow they. Support some small belief we have or some way of life we believe. Whether it's John was talking about fairness. Say you believe actually life is fair and what happens, I agree with John. I don't think it is fair. I think it's messy. Let's just call it a political stand comes that will enforce that life is fair or not fair. That's probably not the best example, but I'll stay with it. And then we're going to hold on to that more and more because somehow it does some part of our personality it supports. So it's not just that we're wrong around that one thing. It's really threatening to a much deeper part of us.
Yeah. It's our ego.
Yeah.
I mean,
in a word.
It's our ego. And I think that's part of really what Pilgrim's Landing is calling us to do, or offering people the opportunity to do, is to kind of keep excavating that ego so it doesn't, it's not in the driver's seat of our lives. Mm-hmm. So we get to choose who we want to be. And part of dismantling that ego is practicing humility and allowing ourselves to be vulnerable.
Right.
And these are things that are not learned and they're not reinforced in our culture or in most of our families. And so I believe that those are spiritual practices, actually.
Yeah. And you wrote a book about meditation. And I want to talk about that because this is kind of like, I can remember a time in my life when I did meditate every day. I don't have the time right now. I should make time, I know. You do react differently to stresses and things that come into your life. You do, I don't know, there's sort of a peacefulness to it or something that stays with you long after you're meditating.
There is. It's a breathing space in our lives. And the brain chemistry actually changes because of it. And we're healthier in every way. And again, it is about the space of silence, the taking space in life to rest. Even meditation is nothing more for an individual than quiet.
Mm-hmm.
Just some quiet time.
Yeah, was it? Your mom used to say, "Sleep on it. Don't
yes,
make
exactly.
Yeah, don't have any. You have to sleep on it and tell me tomorrow what you think."
Yeah.
There's a great Meatloaf song, I think.
Stephen is giving us a call from Chatham. Good morning, Stephen.
Hello, good morning. I don't know if people know this, but it's National Week of Conversation.
Oh,
this week.
Did not know that.
And people can look, there's something called the Listen First Project.
Oh, wow.
And that would be listenfirstproject.org for more information. But it's all about the seek first to listen and then to be understood. So it's totally in line with what you all are saying. And I just wanted people to check that out and find out what's going on this week. And the other thing is that I read something about Sherry Turkle is, I think, an author also who's written, I can't remember the book she wrote, but anyway, it's she said that the technology also is helping us, or not helping us, preventing us from thinking, because we have so much information and we're making decisions lickety-split that we are apt to be less worse listeners.
Yeah.
because we don't have time to ponder the other person's point of view. We decide right away.
Yeah.
So the technology can be a curse and a boon, but anyway.
Stephen, thanks for that. We did not know about that, so thank you for sharing that with us. We appreciate that.
I would like to speak to something else he mentioned, and maybe you've heard this term, the listicles. Have you heard that? That so many of our news sites, they give us lists of these 10 things that will
right? Yeah.
And we think that those are news. But that trend of listicles has started to inform other journalism. So the how you should feel about something after you read it is in the headline.
Hmm.
It's not just reading a more generic headline and then giving you the space to make up
your
own mind about it.
Sometimes the headline doesn't match the story at all. Yeah,
this is true, too.
Right.
Yeah. So I love what Stephen brought up about the Listen First Project, because that's the other thing. We've lost, if we ever really had it deeply in our culture, the ability to listen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anne, you mentioned that you did a program in Charleston, South Carolina, a community grappling with a history of racial division in the aftermath of that 2015 mass shooting at a church. Tell us more about the program you offered and how participants responded to that.
Okay, it's very similar to the program that we'll be offering at Pilgrim's Landing on the 20th of October, the morning of the 20th. You know, when it's tempting to fall into despair in these times, it's really helpful to look in places that are hopeful. And Charleston, for me, was one, because in a community that has such a deep, complicated racial history, after the shooting at the Mother Church there, the community came together as one. It was a conscious decision on the part of the other churches, of community groups, of the citizens, to not let this devolve into ways it has in other communities around, turning into racial violence. I mean, that could have been just a firestorm of violence. And certainly has been in other communities. And instead, they came together immediately and with determination that was not going to happen there. They were going to use this as a way to say, we are not going to do that. Mm-hmm. And thousands of people came and crossed that bridge over into the island there. I mean, if you see an aerial of it, it is so moving. It's thousands of people, and there weren't protesters. Mm-hmm. They were there to say, we're one, this is unacceptable, we're all grieving, we're all the same skin color beneath. I mean, it was just a moment, and that holds so much hope.
Mm.
And actually, it was a great, I thought it was a great workshop, because the people came wanting to explore how do we see the humanity of each other, and how can we go out, as Danielle was saying earlier this morning, okay, so we determine within ourselves that we'll try to be our best self and bring it and connect. How do we bring that into the community? And so that's the workshop, and the forum that's going to be at the Pilgrim's Landing is about how do we take that out into the world.
All right. So, Danielle, you want to tell us more about this workshop?
Sure.
Yeah, go ahead.
So it's Saturday, October 20th from 9:30 to 12:30. And Anne is going to be offering a forum.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a way for people to come together and kind of experience a new perspective of how do we see each other? How might we create a new vision for what community means to us? How do we get past division? All these things that we're talking about today. And part of that, she will talk more about her inspiration for the Halo Effect. Mm-hmm. And it'll include a screening of the documentary that she was describing earlier.
Mm-hmm.
It's very, very powerful to see this documentary and hear how it inspired Anne. To make that connection visually is really, really cool. Mm-hmm. And it'll include a field trip around the town of Chatham, mm-hmm. and some time for reflection and conversation. And doors will open at 9. There will be some light breakfast treats and tea and coffee for mm-hmm. folks who want to participate.
Yeah. Tell us about the labyrinth.
So there is a beautiful stone-paved labyrinth in Chase Park in Chatham, and it was gifted to the town for its 300th anniversary. And for anyone who doesn't know, the labyrinth is an ancient symbol. People often confuse it with a maze, but the labyrinth, there's one path. It winds around and around in a circle, and it ends in the center. There's only one path, so there aren't any wrong turns or choices you have to make. And you enter the labyrinth on one path, and then you wind your way back out, and it can be a meditative tool for just a quiet walk. You can enter it or with a question on your heart or seeking guidance, or there really is no right or wrong way to walk the labyrinth, but it's a symbol for our life journey with all of its twists and turns. And it's an invitation to go inward and an outward symbol to go inward. And it's in a beautiful, quiet corner of the park.
Right. Let's talk to Marie, who's calling from South Yarmouth. Hi, Marie.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for your conversation. I just happened into it. And it seems like you're speaking a lot about spirituality. And I was thinking about what an opportunity we have on Cape Cod. We're a small place, but a lot has happened here. In 2020, it'll be 400 years since the pilgrims mm-hmm. made their voyage because of faith and by chance of weather got stuck in Chatham and made it to Provincetown. But I'm thinking about, you know, Khalil Gibran wrote The Prophet and Born, and how we have so many writers and painters and the religious groups that set up the summer revivals and Frederick Douglass lighting the abolitionists on fire in Nantucket. So what can we do with all of our spiritual resources mm-hmm. and looking at 2020, 400 yeah. years in 2 years, as hindsight, what can we put in place, you know, to further this conversation about yeah. kindness and acceptance? Because Matthew Kelly, who's written a lot of books, I heard him speak one time, and he said, you know, it's great to understand, but if you accept, then the person becomes the person who they're meant to be. Mm-hmm. And oh. so there's that aspect as well.
Marie, thanks. Thanks for that. Yeah, 20 with time. There's time to plan.
There is time to plan. Yeah. And it's, you know, it's interesting. Our name as an organization is Pilgrims Landing, and being in this neck of the woods of the country, we often people assume that we mean the original pilgrims that came over on the Mayflower. But when we say pilgrims, we mean us.
Yeah.
We mean each and every one of us that are humans on this world right now, today, that we are all pilgrims. We are all seeking our own authentic path and how to walk that in the world. And we're all pilgrims accompanying each other on that path. And it's by being on that path, I think, with all these things that we've been talking about, curiosity yeah. and openness and seeing each other as fellow pilgrims, you know, seeing that divine connection that we all share, that we're all human. I think we enrich each other's lives by walking with that lens.
Yeah.
And so,
And I like what Marie said about when we accept a person, they can become the person they were meant to be. Mm-hmm. And that really spoke to me. It moved me, actually. And the other thing is I had no idea Gibran wrote that in Born.
Right.
Did you?
No.
So thanks for that, Marie. And we're going to have more information about the October 20th event at Pilgrim's Landing at our website, capeandislands.org. Danielle Talley and Anne LeClaire, thanks so much for coming in. Really fascinating conversation this morning. I really enjoyed it. Coming up after break, reflections on gratitude, acceptance, and hope.